Hello, this is Lois Couch reading the Vermillion County News for Friday, January the 18th. And the first article has the headline, Grant to Help Community Health Network. Dateline Danville. Ashton Greer has been working to get funding for the Central Illinois Community Health Network for 2 years. And now her efforts have paid off. The network will be able to continue its work and expansion during 2019 as a result of a $10,000 grant from the John P. Cadle Foundation. It just feels really good to know that it's stabilized, said Ashton Greer, Community Health Program Manager at OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center. It's amazing. The funding means that the 70 partners in Vermillion and Champaign counties won't have to pay a fee this year. For any organization that wants to join or has already joined, there's no fee, she said. In 2018, which was its first year, the network didn't receive a grant, but OSF put in $5,000 and the partner organizations covered the rest. Community Health Network has been expanding since its launch in September 2017. It has provided more than 2,000 people with financial assistance, spiritual support, health care, and other social services. The database helps social service agencies, churches, and nonprofits in Vermillion and Champaign counties exchange case management information and distribute area-wide bulletins and alerts during times of need. The network ensures wraparound services for community members in need by serving as a communication tool among the agencies. We are thankful for the diverse partners that collaborated with our ministry to make this happen, said Michael Rohall, Executive Director of Love INC, and that means in the name of Christ, of Vermillion County. Representatives from OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center and University of Illinois Extension made significant contributions to the proposal. OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart in Danville spearheaded development of the Community Health Network. Rohall said its leadership was instrumental in identifying the database tool the network is using to improve services to the underserved members of the area. Rohall said Ashton Greer has been a great promoter for the network and has been sharing her vision with the members of the Step Up group and various organizations throughout Vermillion County. He also noted that Caitlin Kownacki with the UVI Extension helped elevate the quality of the proposal by providing important insight on network interactions. The network has the potential to make a significant impact on the community, he said. By building bridges between partners and connecting Vermillion County residents to the resources they need in order to thrive, we can restore our community to the prominence it once had. The administrative panel has set goals for continued growth in 2019. In addition to expanding the number of partners and available services, the group hopes to expand training for users and to introduce new features to enhance information sharing. OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center continues to provide vision and direction for the Community Health Network and will continue to oversee and expand community use of the database in years to come. And now an article with the headline, Jury Acquits Danville Man in 2009 Killing. Defense argued eyewitnesses weren't reliable or credible. Dateline Danville, after spending 8 years and 2 months behind bars for the murder of a 20-year-old Danville man almost a decade ago, Lafayette Harper will soon walk free. After deliberating less than 2 hours, a Vermillion County jury of 7 women and 5 men on Thursday found the 35-year-old Danville man not guilty of first-degree murder in the October 24, 2009 fatal shooting of Timothy Schutz, Jr. The verdict stunned many people in the courtroom, including Mr. Schutz's loved ones who attended every day of the trial. I think it's bull, Mr. Schutz's father, Tim, said softly, hanging his head as he walked out of the courtroom. Hold on here. In the hallway, Mr. Schutz's family members and friends wept and voiced their disbelief and disappointment with the verdict. One said that even though Harper was acquitted, it doesn't mean he was innocent of the crime. Mr. Schutz's sister Tiffany said that regardless of the outcome, Tim is still missed more than anyone can imagine. She said she hopes people remember him as someone who would give you the shirt off his back. He was my best friend. Back inside the courtroom, Vermillion County Public Defender Mike Mara, who represented Harper, hugged his client's mother. Mara declined to comment on the outcome. In September 2010, Harper's cousin, Davion Harper, now 37, was convicted of murder and armed robbery in connection with the shooting. He has been serving a 30-year sentence at the Stateville Correctional Center, though a deal reached last year may cut that time short. In October 2014, a jury also convicted Lafayette Harper in Mr. Schutz's murder and found he personally fired the gun that caused the death. He was sentenced to 65 years in prison that December. However, in July 2017, the fourth District Appellate Court reversed the conviction, saying the trial court erred by allowing the jury to see the content of text messages sent to Lafayette Harper's phone the night of the murder, which contained inadmissible hearsay regarding the defendant's rumored involvement in the murder. At his second trial, which started Monday, special prosecutors from the Illinois Attorney General's office presented testimony from 22 witnesses, including two eyewitnesses to the shooting, Davion Harper and Randy Smalley, Mr. Schutz's friend. They also presented physical evidence recovered during the investigation, including a sawed-off shotgun, a Ruger 9mm pistol, a revolver, a fashion bug bag, a backpack, fingerprints, and phone records for both Harper's phones on the night of the shooting. During her closing argument, Assistant Illinois Attorney General Haley Buchout reminded the jury of the testimony of the two witnesses and of IECA, I don't know how to pronounce it, Ika Smalley Trimble, Smalley's sister and Mr. Schutz's fiancée at the time, who went with the men to the east side of town. All told you essentially the same story, she said. Smalley testified that he made a deal with a man named Buster, Davion Harper's nickname, to buy 10 pounds of marijuana for $3,500. Davion Harper testified that the arrangement was for 5 pounds of marijuana and that when he couldn't come up with that amount, he and Lafayette Harper planned to set up the deal and rob the man of the money. Smalley recalled driving with his sister and Mr. Schutz to the east side of the city and finding Davion Harper waiting for them. Both he and Davion Harper recalled going back and forth about him and Mr. Schutz getting into Davion Harper's car, and eventually they agreed and ended up at the park. Both Smalley and Davion Harper recalled the latter getting several calls and text messages. They also recalled sitting in the car in the park when someone opened the back passenger door where Mr. Schutz was sitting and Mr. Schutz getting shot. A forensic pathologist testified that Mr. Schutz died of a shotgun wound to the head and that he was shot at close range. Both Smalley and Davion Harper identified Lafayette Harper as the shooter, although not until a few months later in Smalley's case, and several years later in Davion Harper's case. Buchout also reminded the jury how physical evidence and testimony from police, a fingerprint expert, a woman who lived near the park, and a former classmate of the defendant corroborated their testimony. It included a text message to /N1 from Davion Harper's phone to his cousins at 7:15 that night, which Davion Harper said was a signal to let his cousin know where the money was in the car, and a 68-second call from Davion Harper's phone to his cousins. Davion Harper testified that as part of the plan, he called his cousin on speakerphone so the men could hear a conversation about moving the location from a house to Elmwood Park. It also included Lafayette Harper's fingerprint, which was found on the back passenger door where Mr. Schutz was sitting, a black bag containing a short sawed-off shotgun that Kathy Cunningham said she found in her flower bed a week after the shooting, testimony from Logan Vance, who said he gave his classmate Lafayette Harper shotgun shells prior to the shooting, and Mr. Schutz's DNA on the shotgun. Davion Harper also testified that he was getting ready to drive Mr. Schutz to the hospital that As he was getting ready to drive Mr. Schutz to the hospital, he saw a piece of flesh on his car seat and wiped it away with a towel. Buchhout said Danville police officer Nicholas Mooney testified that a light washcloth covered in brain tissue was among the items he observed at the scene of the shooting in the park. Mira argued that the state's two eyewitnesses weren't credible or reliable. Their evidence comes from a liar and someone who is clearly mistaken, said Mira, whose sole witness, Aaron Benjamin, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at the University of Illinois, testified about human memory, how it's affected by stress, time, and other information that's taken in, and how it's always changing, among other things. While Smalley wasn't there to lie, Mira said, he appeared confused while giving his testimony and would have been clearly stressed during the robbery and shooting. He added that Mr. Schutz was his friend. Randy wants somebody to be found guilty, but Randy is mistaken in his identification, he said, reminding the jury that shortly after the shooting, he gave police a description of the shooter, including that he had a skinny build and was 6'4" or 5" tall, which doesn't match Lafayette Harper's build. Mara reminded the jury that Benjamin said the earlier you access someone's memory, the more accurate it's likely to be. He also pointed out that it wasn't until May 24, 2010, that Smalley saw a photo of Lafayette Harper and identified him as the shooter to police. But he had already seen the picture of Lafayette Harper, Barris said, referring to the photo lineup. Dr. Benjamin told you as time goes by, source confusion is possible. Mira also pointed out the inconsistencies in the two witnesses' testimony and that Davion Harper lied to police on multiple occasions. He argued that he lied about his cousin's involvement simply so he could cut a deal with prosecutors that would throw out his murder conviction and shave about 20 years off his sentence. Davion lies because it's his strategy, Mira said. During his testimony, Davion Harper testified that he initially rejected a plea agreement for 10 years for armed robbery from the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office, thinking a jury would see him as the accomplice and acquit him of murder. He later filed a post-conviction petition asking for his old deal back, which is pending. Then on April 6th, he signed an agreement with current prosecutors that would let him plead guilty to armed robbery for a maximum sentence of 11 years and 9 months, 85 of which he is required to serve, in exchange for testifying against his cousin. Under the deal, he could be released as early as October. He never said anything about who the shooter was, Mira said. He never said anything about Lafayette Harper. All of a sudden, he has all these details. He had this plan 8 years after he was convicted, and the state gave him a deal for it. And now I'm going to do the obituaries. And the first is for Christine Carruzes. Christine Carruzes, 80, of St. Louis, Missouri, formerly of Westville, died on January the 12th, 2019. A celebration of Chris's life will be at noon Saturday, January 19th at Sunset Herbist Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville, with Father Deus officiating. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to noon Saturday prior to her service at the funeral home, with a rosary service to be at 11:45 a.m. She will be laid to rest in Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery, Westville. And the next is for Richard Simpson. Richard Simpson, 75, of Collison, died at 9:22 a.m. Wednesday, January 16, 2019. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Blurton Funeral Home, 400 North Vermilion Street, Potomac. And the next is for Diane Gary, 60, of Danville, who died on Wednesday, January 16, 2019. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East Williams Street, Danville. And the next is for Charles F. Dyer, Jr., 78, of Danville, Illinois, who died on January 12, 2019. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, January 20th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Celebration of Life service will be at 11 a.m. Monday, January 21st at Bethel Lutheran Church, 901 West First Fairchild Street, Danville. Officiating the service will be Pastor Ed Stone. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial donations may be made in Charlie's name to Bethel Lutheran Church, 901 West Fairchild Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832. And now we go back to the news articles. And the first one has the headline, Maker of Things. Dateline Danville. Brace yourself for some whimsical surprises when you step into the Danville Art League, such as the lifelike mermaid in a wheelchair who's walking a large fish, or a wooden table that looks like it has zippers, or a pair of boxing gloves that look realistic. These items and more, created by Jim Sheehan, are on display at the center through January and February. Sheehan will talk about his work at a reception from 2 to 4 p.m. January 27th at the Art League. There will be refreshments and piano music. Sheehan describes himself as a maker of things, and his creations, most in wood or ceramic, are three-dimensional thoughts. He sees beauty in everyday objects and has an eye for lines, shapes, and colors. Sheehan can create in many materials, but he especially likes the warmth and natural beauty of wood. I just happen to like wood, he said. You can carve it, sand it, do whatever you want. It's a pliable medium and has inherently good colors. Carol Garver, vice president of the Art League, said she likes this diversity of materials, including clay and wood. The textures are just amazing, she said. To take a hunk of wood and make something out of it, it's magic. This is an interesting show, Garver said, and is a bit different from past exhibits. He shows a sense of humor and turns it into art with his imagination, she said. Also, he uses some of his pieces, such as tables, in his own home. Garver said, I think art is beautiful, but when you surround yourself with beautiful, useful things, it's wonderful. On a trip to Florida, he noticed numerous images of mermaids and wondered how they would get around on land. He carved a wheelchair for the long-lashed, pink-lipped mermaid to ride in and added a large fish on a leash. On the wall are wooden seashells. She's my fun lady, he said. In fact, many of his pieces show his sense of humor. He had a good time carving a man's cap that hangs from a hook, along with a baseball glove and a pair of boxing gloves, complete with laces and other details. One day he was in the grocery store and his wife found him staring at an acorn squash. He bought the beautiful vegetable and used it to create a vase. While walking in Vermilion County's Heron County Park, he noticed acres of lotus flowers. He made a cast of a huge leaf, which he turned into a ceramic bowl. With another bowl, he pressed a doily into the clay, added a wooden button and a chain fringe. Having an eye for details and beauty, he took unique postage stamps and carved the designs into large pieces. There are stamps from China, Austria, and France, as well as a 1 cent stamp with George Washington's image, which Sheehan saw on a 1950 postcard. Another stamp features Andrew Jackson, and one is a 22 cent folk art stamp with a duck on it. Other items include a sculpture of a woman's body that he made in college, a sea captain made with redwood and then stained gray, which makes it look like bronze, a pair of children's shoes, 2 sets of dominoes and wooden boxes, portraits, vases, tables, and more. There also is a vase called the Wish Keeper, with wishes written onto pieces of paper tucked inside. His favorite piece is a vase called Pinstripes with Pearls, which illustrates the beauty of a special businesswoman and friend. Sheehan also has been involved in renovations at his church, St. Paul's Catholic Church. Several years ago, he spent about 20 hours stripping, sanding, and repainting a 14-foot crucifix that was donated by former resident Ralph Davis. The restored crucifix, which other people worked on as well, was erected in the church sanctuary on August 12, 2008. In addition, Sheehan helped with the church's renovation project. Sheehan and his wife Patricia did all the design work and renovations, including adding handrails and an arch. He also carved new hands for a statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary at Chelarmon Academy's South Campus. A native of Neoga, Sheehan got a degree in art from Eastern Illinois University. He met his wife, Pat Wolfelt, there, and they moved to her hometown of Danville in 1972. Pat, who majored in Spanish, taught at Southview School for 5 years. She and became a home decorator, working on a variety of projects, from individual homes to big projects with his wife. He now works with the Pottery Club at the Art League and is known as Mr. Fix-It, as he has a talent for taking things apart and putting them back together. A couple of years ago, Sheehan lost a leg due to a blood clot, but continued to work. Garver said he's an inspiration in that he doesn't let his disability keep him from being creative and productive. Art runs in Sheehan's family as his mother was an oil painter. The Sheehan son, Benjamin of Chicago, does design work, paintings, and CAD drawings for an architecture firm. He and his son share creative ecstasy, he said, explaining you have a thought, you work on it, and it gets better, and you can feel it inside. Sheehan is amazed at how many people say they don't know about the Art League, and he hopes people will visit to see exhibits. I push art like people who grow zucchinis push zucchinis, he said. I push a love of beauty. And the next article has the headline, Two People Hurt by Stray Bullets in City County. Dateline Danville. Vermilion County and Danville police are investigating two unrelated shooting incidents. About 6 p.m. Wednesday, Vermilion County Sheriff's deputies responded to reports of gunshots fired in the area of Illinois Route 1, just north of the Georgetown city limits. Preliminary investigation showed there was a dispute at a residence where a firearm was discharged. A 28-year-old female not involved in the dispute was driving on Route 1 and was struck by a stray bullet that entered her vehicle. The incident remains under investigation and no names were released Thursday morning, county police said. In Danville, police were called to the area of 807 Southmore about 12:20 a.m. Thursday for a report of several shots fired. Upon arrival, officers found a 27-year-old Danville man with a gunshot wound to his wrist. The victim told visitors he was visiting a friend at the residence and was shot at while standing outside of his vehicle. The victim was transported to an area hospital for treatment to his injury, which was not considered to be life-threatening. Danville police are continuing to investigate this incident. Anyone who has information regarding this crime is asked to call Danville police at 431-2250 or call Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 446-TIPS. Tips may also be submitted at www.vccrimestoppers.org. And now for community briefs. And the first one is from Danville. And the title of it is Wreaths Removal Delayed. Due to a winter storm in Saturday's forecast, the removal of wreaths from Danville National Cemetery will be delayed until 11 a.m. January 26th. More than 4,000 wreaths were placed during the Wreaths Across America ceremony in December. For information, call Tammy Williams at 516-2354 or email danvillewreaths, all one word, at yahoo.com. Anyone with a pickup truck and or trailer is encouraged to participate. And the next one has the headline, VFW Plans Meal. Jewel White Post 728 at 8 Pine Street will serve an all-you-can-eat breakfast from 7:30 to 10 a.m. Saturday at the Post. Cost will be $6. Carryouts will be available. The Post offers bingo at 2 p.m. Sundays. All are welcome. And the next has the headline, KFC Lists Events. The Knights of Columbus, 310 Bryan Avenue, will serve a Swiss steak dinner from 5:30 to 7 p.m. today. The cost will be $10. Also, from 7 to 10 p.m. today, the Dixie Flyer Band will perform in the hall. Cover charge is $5 at the door. All are welcome. And the next community brief is from Covington, Indiana, and it has the headline, Learn About Plants. Purdue University Extension and University of Illinois Extension plan their annual Bi-State Gardening Conference on Tuesday at the Beef House. Registration begins at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and the presenters will begin at 6:45 p.m. Eastern Time following dinner. The cost of the program is $20, which includes dinner, payable online or at the door. Pre-register by calling 217-333-7672 or online at go.illinois.edu/bystate. And the next is from Hoopston, and the headline is Program Canceled. The Sensory Storytime and Tree Climbers Genealogy Group, scheduled for Saturday at Hoopston Public Library, have been canceled. And the next article has the headline, Oakwood Man Seeks to Open Barbershop. Dateline, Oakwood. Colton Lawhorn, an Oakwood native, discussed his plans with the Oakwood Village Board Monday night to open a barbershop in downtown Oakwood. Mayor Clay Woodard said Lawhorn plans to return to his hometown and open his barbershop in the old fire department building on South Scott Street. He would open where the police are now, and we'd move the police to the emergency rescue building, he said. Woodard said the village would use money from its TIF 2, that's tax increment financing account, to pay for relocating the police department to the emergency rescue drive on Lake Bluff Drive. In terms of business development, this is inexpensive, Woodard said. This is a young man from the Oakwood community who would like to return home and open a business. Although Woodard said Lawhorn and the village are in preliminary talks right now, Lawhorn would like to have his barbershop open by the first of summer. In other business Monday, village board members approved switching all of the village department's internet and phone service to Comcast, but maintain a landline at the emergency rescue building. Approved installing a couple of stormwater grates in the 300 block of South Seymour Street so that stormwater drains more quickly in that area. Tabled until next month's meeting a decision to sell the emergency rescue's old ambulance to the Oakwood Fire Department. Several months ago, the emergency rescue purchased a 2010 ambulance from Vermillion County, Indiana Ambulance Service, which closed. Announced the village's plans to sell all of the property it owns that it leases to Utilities Inc., which provide water and sewer services to the village. We're not in the business of water or sewer, and we're not in the business of being landowners, Woodard said. Tabled until next month's meeting, a decision to powder coat the playground equipment and picnic tables that will be installed in Veterans Park on Barbara Lane. Woodard said the village is going to find out the cost to do that. Place an update that construction will begin midsummer on the Speedway gas station that will be located on the east side of Oakwood Road, just south of Pit Stop. And now an opinion thing from the Arlington Daily Herald under the headline Midwest Voices, and it's called The Dawn of Governor Pritzker. It would be fair to characterize our endorsement last October of J.B. Pritzker's candidacy for governor as tepid. That endorsement was more a repudiation of Bruce Rauner's inept stewardship than an enthusiastic embrace of a Pritzker alternative. But we did say progress must come from somewhere, and we know that because of Illinois' political realities, it will not be through Rauner's reelection. Hope for change rests only with Democrat J.B. Pritzker. As much as anything else, we banked on the hope that Pritzker not only has the temperament to bring well-meaning people together to work on behalf of good government, but that he is well-meaning himself, that he is motivated not by hidden self-serving agendas, but by a genuine wish to do a good job. Naive, perhaps, but there is some evidence to support a belief in his fundamental altruism, and Illinois can only hope. It is, of course, far too early to pronounce a grade on Pritzker's performance, but we are impressed by the early signs that suggest Pritzker means to have a more thoughtful and more collaborative governorship than Illinois has enjoyed in 20 years. He reached across the aisle to include such Republicans on his transition team as former Governor Jim Edgar and former Senate Minority Leader Christine Redonio. He invited all four of the legislative leaders to dinner at his home in a clear attempt at building relationships, if not bipartisanship. Going further than that, Pritzker tapped Republican State Representative David Harris of Arlington Heights for his administration. Harris, who did not run for re-election, is expected to become the director of the Illinois Department of Revenue. Beyond all that, the new governor also has reached out positively to the general public. Illinois has many difficult challenges, and many of the solutions will be hard and controversial. Tough days lie ahead, but it's an encouraging start. And this has been Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, January the 18th. I look forward to reading to you next week.